Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. My name is John Snowflake Hodge, joined by Jumbo Cheese J.C. Abbott. And today we are having a CFL Combine Megapod because you and I were on the scene in Winnipeg at the Fort Garry Hotel at the Winnipeg Soccer North Federation and a number of social spaces, rubbing shoulders with CFL talent evaluators, coaches, prospects, league staff members, and even a few fans who came up to say hi. So thank you for doing that if you're a podcast listener who came and said hi to JC and or myself. Let's get right into it, JC. We're going to talk about the prospects themselves in a moment. But first, I thought we could talk about our just overall impressions of the Combine as a whole.
Yeah, I thought this was a fantastic venue for a combine, both the Fort Garry Hotel itself and the Winnipeg Soccer Complex North, or whatever it was called. I'll let the Winnipegger give you the official title, but the place where the actual practices were taking place. The Fort Garry, 110-year-old historic hotel. It's far too nice for any sort of CFL event, and yet we were in there making use of all that space. It truly was a spectacular place to be all weekend with all those CFL peoples. I think the prospects had a fantastic time as well with that venue. If you're going to put someone up in Winnipeg and make them spend a week there, that was the place to do it. And then the field itself, great sight lines, fantastic turf. Everything about it was pro caliber, and that's exactly what we want to see from this event. I mean, the last time it was in Winnipeg many years ago, that was the event with the carpet turf that was rolled out where everyone was slipping around and people had a lot of complaints. This was miles better than not only that, but I think of all the other venues we've seen in the past as well.
Yeah, and for the uninitiated, I've lived in Manitoba my whole life. I'm born and raised in Winnipeg, live in Winnipeg. Now, as an adult, JC is a soft West Coaster who had never really spent any meaningful amount of time in the city of Winnipeg. And I will say, one regret I had from the event, which is, of course, not the fault of any person, but, you know, was just kind of a lousy happenstance, is that the weather was terrible. In Manitoba, we had an exceptionally balmy February. Most of our snow had actually melted long before people even arrived for the combine, but for whatever reason, Mother Nature had plus five degrees on Monday, and then when everybody arrived for combine on Tuesday, it was like minus 13, feeling like minus 22, and for basically the entire combine it was unbelievably cold. The wind just whipping through those downtown Winnipeg buildings, so that was kind of annoying, but obviously it is Winnipeg in March. You can't expect balmy temperatures, tropical weather. The other thing I will say that I didn't particularly like was the players at the facility were wearing Guardian caps. And I appreciate that for player safety, that matters. I'm not suggesting the league shouldn't have used Guardian caps, but this was the first year of Guardian caps, and it made it really difficult to tell the players apart because, of course, part of the combine evaluation is even from a distance, you can see, okay, that's a Sherbrooke helmet. Okay, that's a Nebraska helmet. Okay, that's one of the dinos that's here, right? You could tell the prospects apart based on their respective college or university helmet, and the Guardian caps made it a little bit tricky. But those nitpicks aside, I agree, JC. I think this was the best combine I've been to. I thought the talent was very good. I thought things ran very smoothly, very efficiently. Another regret I had from a Winnipeg standpoint is that the best and most efficient way to get from the soccer complex to the hotel led down a bit of an ugly stretch of Main Street that is probably the very roughest neighborhood in Winnipeg. And, you know, I don't want to sound unsympathetic to the people who are struggling in downtown Winnipeg. Obviously, they deserve and need help. But it was a little bit disappointing, on the other hand, to have the city showcased in that way, because I would hate for somebody to say, oh, wow, this is all of Winnipeg. I'm going to judge Winnipeg by this five-block stretch here, which wouldn't be fair to the city of Winnipeg. But regardless, again, I thought overall it was a great week. I wish that there weren't as many player injuries after day one. I talked to some of the positional coaches who were involved on the field. They speculated that maybe they went a little bit too hard on the first day. There were a lot of kind of soft tissue things day two. And by day three, there were a number of players ill, which, again, was too bad because we missed out on opportunities to kind of evaluate them and see what they could do. But, again, I don't blame anybody for that. That's kind of beyond everybody's control. All in all, a great combine. Just some bad luck, I think, with things like the weather, some bad luck with things like injuries. But I also think we avoided any major injuries, at least that I'm aware of. Last year, we had a torn ACL at the combine. That was very unfortunate. So nice that we at least seem to avoid a disaster there, JC.
Yeah, that's very fortunate. And I know there are people who will go back and forth within the league on how legitimate some of those soft tissue injuries were. I think there is a little bit of self-preservation from some of these athletes, and rightfully so, right? If you've done what you need to do to cement your draft stock, there is a risk of injury here at these events. And I'm sure, I don't think anyone was completely faking and making things up, but certainly there are things that they might push through in a regular season that on the third day of practice, they're maybe not as willing to push through at this type of event. The one nitpick I have isn't really from the league side, because I thought the league did a really fantastic job in organizing the football portion of this event. But last year when we were in Edmonton, the venue wasn't nearly as good. I thought in terms of the smaller field, it was really crowded, not great sight lines there. But the Elks as an organization took the opportunity to run a number of clinics immediately after the combine. As the prospects were leaving the field, there were sometimes kids coming in. I believe there was a girls flag football event afterwards, a refereeing clinic. There were some things around the event. To me, I was a little bit disappointed that the Bombers didn't do a little bit more to showcase the event and to ensure that there were people coming in, that they were using that facility after and tying in some local events to the combine. There was a Bombers presence there, you know, a merchandise booth that was selling Bombers gears and combine hoodies for about $100 a pop there at the facility. But I didn't really see any other tie-ins like I expected based on what Edmonton did last year. I think that's a missed opportunity from the Blue Bombers organization.
I think that's a fair criticism. You know, there were a lot of Bomber faces there. Shane Gauthier, Patrick Neufeld were attending as part of the internship program that the CFL has for people potentially looking to get into league office positions or personnel positions with teams. There was also Willie Jefferson, who was involved in the CFL live stream, and Brady Oliveira made an appearance, had a nice chat with him as well about the work that he's doing in Bali to rescue dogs with his partner, who his name is Alex, I believe, if I'm remembering that correctly. Obviously, yes, it would have been nice. I do also think, especially when you've got Brady there and you've got Willie there, why not try to draw more people out with an autograph signing or a photo opportunity and schedule that for 30 minutes before the on-field stuff is set to get underway. And that way fans can show up, they can get their picture, they can get their autograph, and then go into the building, right? I do think the Bombers locally do a very good job of marketing their team, but that is a way that they could have made it better. Because I agree that the crowds weren't quite as large as I thought they would be. The CFL week crowds were fantastic in 2018. I don't think they were bad this time around, but they weren't huge. But then again, it was also, as part of CFL week, much more heavily marketed towards being a fan event. The CFL Combine this year around was marketed much more as a, hey, if you want to come watch these kids run around, you can. But that's what it's going to be. This is a combine. This is an evaluation. And unlike the NFL Combine, when you have, you know, players who are household names already coming out of college, especially at the quarterback position, the CFL Combine just isn't that. And dare I say, never will be that, right? We're not going to have a player ever as a CFL prospect who is as famous as Caleb Williams or Drake May or Marvin Harrison Jr. So I liked all of it. I would happily have it here every year. I said as much to a number of CFL staffers because the sight lines are so good. And for those who maybe haven't watched the live stream or weren't following up with our social media feeds, the upper level at the soccer complex goes 360 degrees all the way around the field, which made for fantastic sight lines. I've been to many combines, as JC said, where, you know, at times the media is sequestered to the dankest, darkest corner. And then there's 17 layers of people put in front of the only area where the media can watch. And you hear the popping of pads and you think to yourself, wow, that must look really cool. But I can't see a single thing. That was not the case in Winnipeg. The sight lines were amazing. And each time I told three CFL staff members, and to a fault, they each replied with, you sound like Wade Miller, because I suppose Wade Miller, the club's president and CEO, was also doing a little bit of pushing to potentially get the CFL Combine back in Winnipeg each year. We already know it's going to be in Regina in 2025. By the way, I'm told that the venue in Regina does not have an upper viewing area, which is kind of unfortunate. It means the sight lines will not be as good there as they were this past week. And from what I understand, the CFL wants to continue moving this event around post-2025, right? It was in Edmonton last year. It was in Toronto the year before. And I'm sure there's folks potentially in Montreal or even Quebec City, right, with that fantastic facility they have at Laval Université, who want to host this thing. There's Ottawa, right? Ottawa was supposed to get CFL week, if I remember correctly, in 2019 before a labor dispute kind of kiboshed that. What a great event to potentially bring to Ottawa if they have, of course, the indoor facility required. So I would like to see it moved around, but man, at the same time, I thought this was the perfect venue in Winnipeg and made it really, really a pleasure to cover that on-field stuff. I watched some of it live. Anything I didn't watch, I was able to record on my phone. And the last couple of days, I've been watching all the one-on-ones, 12-on-12s back, and it's been really, really great to kind of get the opportunity to not just trust on what you saw live, but to be able to go back and really key in on each individual matchup. It's great.
Well, let's get into the players here, Hodge. We're going to break it down into three sections for our fans and dive into these groups of players. Let's start off with, you know, what they, I think, erroneously term the offensive skill positions, but the quarterbacks, the running backs, tight end, fullbacks, and the receivers. A really talented group of players out here catching the football, running the football in Winnipeg. Who stood out to you, Hodge?
Yeah, as a former offensive lineman, I don't like the term skill position either. The suggestion I've made to people is we should call these positions ball touchers because they're people who touch the ball. But for some reason, broadcasters don't seem to want to call them ball touchers on the radio or on television. I don't know why, but it has not caught on. So anyways, we'll go with the skill positions here. There's three quarterbacks in attendance. Ben Miracle just measured in. He did not participate in anything else at the University of Ottawa, which was a shame. Was looking forward to seeing him compete. Casey Bauman was the 6'7" quarterback out of Augustana University, a D2 program in South Dakota, I believe, if I'm remembering that correctly off the top of my head. He only participated, at least when I saw him, on day one. By day three, he was out due to illness. I don't think he did a tremendous job maybe warming himself up to CFL talent evaluators as a passer, but he measured it at a true 6'7 6 3/8, right? He is a true, for all intents and purposes, 6'7". A lot of times when guys are listed at 6'7" in college, they are not. Willie Jefferson even is listed at 6'7". He's not. He is 6'5". And at 229 pounds, ran a 4.86 40-yard dash, posted some pretty impressive testing numbers. So you almost wonder if a team could consider him a project at a different position. And then Jack Zurgiadas, this is a player I sat down, chatted with him for 20 minutes on Tuesday, the very first day that we were able to talk to a lot of these people, on Wednesday, the first day we were allowed to talk to prospects. And he's kind of an interesting story. He transferred to Merrimack in 2022, played a handful of games, and then decided to leave the school, was trying to transfer to UBC, and was unable to do so after he was deemed academically ineligible. His testing numbers were not great, but I thought that after a bit of a rough day with some rust on throwing the ball, he got a huge opportunity on day three of practice with the other quarterbacks out. And I thought he kind of showed out. He had one really bad interception he threw to Tyshawn Blackburn. Other than that, I thought he slung it pretty well, including a gorgeous touchdown pass on a corner route to presumed top receiver draft pick Kevin Mattel. So all in all, the quarterback position did not blow me away, but I also don't think this is a position group you can just write off and say, wow, none of these guys are playing pro by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I think Zurgiadas is a perfect example of somebody who seized an opportunity. I thought he looked terrible on the first day of practice, just really bad. Wasn't comfortable with what he was seeing yet, but he got better the next day. And then that third day, when literally every other quarterback was sick with a stomach bug, he comes out, takes every rep in the team period, and looked really impressive. Made all the throws, was able to step up and escape the pocket, throw on the run, create with his feet a little bit. That's going to stick with CFL teams. And while I don't think either him or Bauman are going to get drafted, I see both of these guys coming into a camp this upcoming season as a non-counter and potentially trying to make a team as a undrafted free agent. I think there is a spot for these guys in a CFL training camp to try and impress in the preseason. Let's move on to the running back group. And that was highlighted by Michael Chris Ike from Delaware State, measuring at 6'1", 225, and just absolutely dominates the testing, wins three different events, ties for the fastest 40-yard dash at a 4.51, also has the fastest three cone at 6.71, and the fastest short shuttle at 4.19. Verts 35.5, broads 10.2. This guy is a physical freak and absolutely cut up like an Adonis. What did you like from Chris Ike this week, Hodge?
I mean, what was there not to like about Chris Ike this week? I mean, his rushing production, admittedly, at Delaware State was limited over, I think he was there for six seasons, though he did miss some time due to injury, and there was the pandemic in there. But he rushed for less than 1,000 yards there. He is very much a downhill runner, as his 6'1", 225-pound frame would indicate. He runs very upright, which is, generally speaking, not what running backs are taught, right? There have been some very successful stand-up running backs. James Wilder Jr., for instance, was very much a stand-up running back who had a lot of success recently in the CFL. But I think what separates Chris Ike is a lot of times when running backs come to the combine, you know, they're getting ready for the CFL draft, people focus on their production, right? And that is not always the most important thing, right? These teams don't necessarily go to the combine going, okay, who's our next starting running back? Right, these teams go to the combine going, who's going to make a backup spot on our roster, predominantly playing special teams, and who's somebody who we can put out there on second and long who is not going to allow our quarterback to end up in a body bag, right? Who is somebody who can protect the passer and block well? And when you talk about that, oftentimes it's the opposite, right? You have guys who can't pass protect, they've never played special teams before, but they can run the ball. Chris Ike, to me, is like the perfect CFL running back prospect in that he has extensive film on special teams. It's good. He's a good blocker. And he's somebody who I don't think ever necessarily projects as a starting running back in the CFL. But to me, he's like the dream to put out there, you know, when you're up by a touchdown late and you're just trying to kill the clock and you can send somebody out there with fresh legs, right? We've seen guys like Ante Milanovic-Litre as Canadian running backs kind of fill that closer role, so to speak. And I think Michael Chrisike is a great candidate to do the same. So to me, I did expect him to be a relatively high pick. I had him in the second round of my mock draft. To me, I think he could potentially go even higher after testing as well as he did. Michael Herzog, to me, tested extremely well out of Hillsdale College. Also, shout out to him. I reported yesterday that he received an invitation to attend the local pro day with the Detroit Lions, which is sensational, right? And it's pretty amazing that this guy might not get drafted in the CFL, yet an NFL team thinks he's worthy of a second look. But he is very small at 5'8". That's going to make it tough for pass protection. Though he does add some value as a receiver. That's originally how he was recruited to Hillsdale, which, by the way, is in Michigan. It's about 90 minutes southeast of the city of Detroit. And he also has experience as a kick returner, which running 4.55 at 201 pounds, I do think that is legitimately fast enough to be a returner in the CFL. Javon Leak, for instance, who was the best returner in the CFL last year, I think ran 4.62 coming out of college. So I like Herzog. You just question the fit. And then I also thought that Matthew Peterson looked pretty good in the drills. Jared Cesari as well. These are both big-time U-Sports running backs. They both tested solidly, not brilliantly, but they both tested solidly. And especially if they are able to figure out that pass pro side of things, if they are able to contribute on special teams, I think both of them could potentially crack rosters in the future in the CFL.
Yeah, I like all of these running backs as ball carriers. I really do. I think they all are tremendous offensive players in that sense. But the question for all of them, like you mentioned with Herzog, is pass protection. And I don't know if any of them really answered those questions at the combine. Cesari had at least one really good rep, but also some poor reps. I thought Herzog, again, he's willing to stick his nose in there and make an attempt, but he's really getting physically manhandled out there by the guys who are bigger than him. Same thing with Matthew Peterson. They're all between 5'10 and 5'8. None of these guys are massive. And while they're nice and thick, all over 200 pounds, it's just the pure, you know, physical nature of the position that when you've got a guy who's at least 240 pounds coming at you downhill, and he's also considerably longer than you are going to be put in a bind. And that is the struggle that all of these players are going to have trying to crack a roster. Because if it was just ball carrying, Hodge, like Herzog, to me, from that aspect of his game, could start in the CFL. Yeah. This is a guy who was a Harlan Hill, you know, finalist. This is the Division II Heisman Trophy last year. Put up 21 touchdowns for Hillsdale College. Just an incredible runner with the football. But it's the other things that you need to do to make a CFL team that makes it really difficult for him. Unfortunately, the one player in this running back group who can really do those things, Anthony Soles, I thought hurt himself with his physical abilities this week, tested extremely poorly. This is the son of the late Michael Soles, who was a tremendous fullback in the CFL for a long time. I think I could have vertical jumped higher than Anthony Soles at 24 inches. Those are offensive lineman numbers at about 100 pounds lighter. Not a good week for him, and I don't think he helped himself enough in the practices. He's a big faller coming out of the combine, in my mind.
I don't think there's much to say about the two fullbacks who are in attendance. And I suppose you could consider Soles to be in this category, because it's clear he's going to have to play fullback at the CFL level if he cracks a roster. The only two guys who were here were Brad Hladek, younger brother of Ben Hladek out of UBC, and Paul-Antoine Ouellette, who came out of the Montreal Caravans. Both of these guys are also long snappers. There is a bit of a shortage of long snappers in the CFL right now. A lot of guys who are snapping around the league, like Mike Benson, Aaron Crawford, are close to the tail end of their careers. more so than the start of their careers. So we are going to see a bit of turnover at that position. To me, the stock for both players was steady. Neither tested better or worse than I thought they would. I thought they both had some good reps. I thought they both had some poor reps in the practices. That group to me is not a non-factor, but you know, not really a storyline coming out of the combine for that reason. The receivers I thought was really interesting. I thought Kevin Metal, he was one of my risers post-combine. And look, this guy was on the latest edition of the Scouting Bureau rankings, albeit at 20 in the final spot. And he was also the 11th overall pick in my first mock draft, which, you know, to me, shows how good he is. I mean, he won the Heck Crichton Trophy, right, for goodness sakes, in 2022 at Laval. But to me, this guy helped himself as much or as anybody else at the combine. And that's because Kevin Metal was charged it back in 2021 as part of a bar fight. He talked about it on the podcast episode that I uploaded this past week from the combine. And he did plead guilty to one count of assault. He does not have a criminal record, did not have to do jail time as a result of that guilty plea. But it's still a red flag that teams were going to ask him about in interviews. He also came into the combine at 229 pounds, and he made it very clear that teams were hoping to see him at 210, 215. There were questions about whether or not he was in shape. And lo and behold, he comes out and he runs a 4.58 40-yard dash, puts up 20 reps on the bench. And this is not a guy who has that quick twitch ability, who is, you know, somebody who's outrunning coverage. He is a physical receiver who finds space open in zones. He is your classic CFL slot back who uses the waggle. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys have had success in the CFL running relatively slowly, right? Like think about Nick Lewis. Nick Lewis was not fast coming out of college, and then he got slower, right? He got very slow by the end of his CFL career. To me, Kevin Metal is that type of player. I know that Jim Barker compared him to Nick Dembski. I kind of see that. I do think Nick Dembski is a little bit more of a stretch the field, deep threat kind of guy. But Kevin Metal, to me, showed that he could do it all. He answered the questions he had to answer about his speed, about his fitness. He answered everything he needed to answer in the interview room. I talked to a number of sources who said he interviewed very well. I also thought he interviewed very well with Three Down Nation when he did the podcast episode with us. To me, Kevin Metal came in as, again, a player people liked, but with questions to answer. And he answered every single question along the way. And to me, I think he's going to be a top two pick in the CFL draft as a result.
I absolutely agree, Hodgen. I don't love the Nick Dempsey comparison, but I did hear another comp from a CFL source who will remain anonymous that I absolutely loved, and that was Lamar Durant.
Yeah.
I think that is somebody who really fits what Kevin Metal is, if you want to picture him. A guy who, again, was a little bit thicker, not overly tall, but really effective in the slot. I think Kevin Metal can be that for a CFL team. And if you're getting a Lamar Durant type player, you want to take him high in the draft. But this is a deep receiving group, and I thought a lot of other players helped themselves as well. Your other riser from this group, Hodge, was spot on in my mind. Kevin's Clercius out of UConn. This is a guy who had some college eligibility left, but is choosing to leave school now because he wants to be a pro. 6'2", 217. Tested well across the board, and I thought looked good in every single day of practice. Really crisp with his routes, but more importantly, excels in all the other things you need to do to make a roster. This guy is more physical than the other receivers that are present. He can block like nobody's business, and he's willing to do those things for you. In my mind, that's going to drive him up teams' draft boards, especially knowing that he can eventually be a number one Canadian receiver for you, but he doesn't have to be right away. He can be that extra guy and help you out on special teams, come in for certain sets as a blocker and excel. He's going to bring value right away. I don't see him getting out of the second round right now.
In true CFL.ca fashion, the 2015 CFL Combine has disappeared from their website, so I can't say what Nick Dembski, his full numbers were, but looking at the results on TSN.ca, where they still have them, Durant ran 4.55. Dembski ran 4.56. Obviously, as mentioned, Kevin Mitchell ran 4.58. So these are essentially identical numbers. Dembski really excelled in the shuttle and three cone, kind of the quickness drills, whereas Durant did better in more of kind of the explosive drills. Like he had a 36-inch vert. I don't know what Dembski had because, again, they only list the top five here. But Kevin Mitchell, for instance, in the vert, did a 35. He also did better than I believe either receiver did on the bench because, of course, Durant and Dembski were both part of that draft class in 2015. So to me, I think that comp makes a lot more sense. But at the end of the day, I think Kevin Mitchell is the best receiving prospect of the last few years. I also think, you know, Lamar Durant, for instance, was a guy who had some questions to answer about, you know, how much he really liked football coming out of the combine. And he started tremendously in his CFL career, fell off towards the end, while Nick Dembski, of course, has continued to achieve success at a high level. I think Kevin Mitchell is going to have a more Dembski-like career in how productive he is. I genuinely believe he will.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Be a day one starter wherever he ends up. Right now, again, I've got him penciled number two to the Ottawa Redblacks because I think he blows all of the Redblacks' Canadian receivers currently on the roster completely out of the water. Kevin Sclerosius, I think, also is better than who the Redblacks currently have. He's another player who is a great CFL prospect in that he has played special teams before, is physical, and can embrace that role. That's the type of stuff that helps you get on a roster and potentially to help you develop into a starter. Somebody else I want to touch on that I thought had a very good combine and just was kind of overshadowed was Del Duncan Busby out of Bemidji State, right? When you're starring at Bemidji State, I mean, he put up almost 3,000 receiving yards over 47 games at Bemidji State with 27 touchdowns. Part of you goes, wow, that's really impressive. The other part of you goes, well, how fast do you really have to run to dominate at Bemidji State? And the answer is at 6'1", 207, he ran 4.56. Put up a 9.98 broad jump, not sensational, but solid. And he had a 7.02 three cone, which I think shows that he has that change of direction that you need to get open at the CFL level, right? Like a lot of guys who dominate at the receiver position at the D2 level, they're 5'10 and they weigh a 185 and they run 4.7. And that's not to say they're not great football players, but that is to say that might not translate to the next level. To me, Del Duncan Busby, the Toronto native, checked every box as to can he translate that to the next level. I really liked what we saw from him. But again, there's also a lot of receivers who are at the combine. This is arguably the deepest position of the draft who looked really good. And if you're a CFL team who needs a receiver, it's probably nice to go ahead and say, hey, we don't necessarily need to grab a guy in the first round because unlike a lot of years where there's only maybe four or five receivers really, really worth taking, there's eight or nine in this one. We're going to get our receiver later on. And I think that's good to not only help fill the depth of these teams, but to push some of the veteran Canadian receivers currently in the CFL. We'll go to the offensive line in a moment, JC, but I want to hear you talk about Ajoa Joe, who is arguably the biggest faller at this year's event.
Yeah, this is the former Clemson receiver who's had a bit of a circuitous journey, transferred out of Clemson after 2 years, spent a year at South Florida, then was essentially told, hey, we don't want you anymore by the Bulls. Played last year at Garden City Community College in Kansas, primarily as a tight end there, and decided rather than transferring back to the Division I level or trying to continue his college career, he was going to come out early and try his hand at professional football. He says he wants to help his family back home in Brooks, Alberta. He's got a single mother from South Sudan. I know the family has had some financial issues in the past, so it's important for him, he feels, as the middle child, to be the breadwinner now. Ajoa is someone, if we had talked about him 3-4 years ago, you would think he'd be going at the top of this draft, or not at all because he was an NFL prospect, but has really fallen off by some, I think he would admit, poor decision-making, left Clemson too early, said he got greedy there, and then suffered a sports hernia at South Florida that he thought really reduced his effectiveness and led to his dismissal from that team. But teams are going to have questions about his attitude. He's a guy who's extremely charismatic. Sitting down with him, it's tough not to like him, but there is a little bit of cockiness there. And the path has shown that maybe he's not willing to put in the work. And then he comes in as a guy who, you know, during his time at Clemson was cut up, 5% body fat. He was 240 pounds. He was running 20 miles an hour, according to him. Shows up at the combine, he's 211, he's a little bit skinny, and he goes out and runs a 4.85 in the 40, which is the slowest among the receivers. That's a really bad number for him. Now, if you look at the tape of him running it, his start is horrific, and I think that puts him in a bad box. He's a little bit faster than that on the field and had some okay reps, but the question remains, why wasn't this guy working on his start? Why wasn't he doing the things necessary to be ready for this combine and put up really just sort of pedestrian numbers across the board? Somebody who should have been a physical freak. There's going to be a team that drafts him and makes the gamble, hoping they can get him back to what he was at Clemson. But there's going to be a couple other teams, I think, that take him off the board entirely based on the vibes they got from him in the interviews.
Full credit to, and by the way, it's not Ajo Ajo, it's Ajo, which is different, and we should say his name correctly. But I want to give full credit to Ajo for wanting to be the breadwinner of his family and helping them out. I think that's admirable. But I fully agree with what you said, JC. The performance was not good enough, and it's shocking to see somebody who, again, was one of the, you know, four-star recruit to what was at the time the number three recruiting class in all of the NCAA, right? This is like Clemson at the height of its powers, with just absolutely sensational players in that program. And it's shocking to see him come up and look very normal, very average. And I will agree with you, JC, very infectious personality, very charismatic, but seeing him gawk at the cameras and stick his tongue out and, you know, want that attention from the cameras at Combine, it makes for really good social media fodder, but that is going to turn some teams off who are going, look, if you want the right to, you know, gawk at the camera and, you know, peacock around with your feathers and stick your abs out and all that stuff, you got to be ready to perform, and you got to perform better than he did. So I'm curious to see what he does at the professional level. I'm not ready to write off Ajo. I still think there is a ton of potential there, but I do agree with you, JC. His behavior, I think, did, though not anything wrong. I'm not suggesting he's a bad person or anything, but just with the way in which he clearly enjoys the limelight, that will have turned some teams off. I fully agree with you there.
Yeah. One other guy I just want to quickly shout out before we move on, Hodge, Ezekiel Teague, who I thought had an okay week overall, didn't test great as a guy who was formerly at Boston College, a top recruit in his class, but came in that final day of practice and they said, hey, we have no quarterbacks. Can you take some quarterback reps? Because he was a quarterback coming out of Cégep and was recruited as such initially to the collegiate level. Did, and I thought, made the best throw of the combine. I think that's going to impress some teams just from the sense that the more you can do, the more you're willing to do or step in and compete for opportunities. That's the right type of attitude. So I did want to shout out that from Teague on the final day of the combine. I was very impressed by his ability to do that.
Let's talk about the big men up front. And I want to frame this conversation just for the uninitiated. So the top, arguably five offensive linemen available in this class were not at the combine. Arguably six. Isaiah Adams out of Illinois is going to get drafted in the NFL. He's never going to play in the CFL. The two UBC prospects who have their pro day on Wednesday, JC, you're going to be there in Vancouver at BC. Friday at BC Play Stadium. There's Theo Benedict and Giovanni Manu. Kyle Hergel out of Boston College is also a potential NFL draft pick. And then you got Daniel Johnson out of Purdue, who did their pro day instead of coming to the CFL Combine. And then you had Gabe Wallace out of Salmon Arm, BC, who was at the University at Buffalo's pro day. So there's six offensive linemen, again, arguably above anybody who was at the Combine this week. And yet I thought the offensive linemen looked really good. A few of them in particular, but on the whole, there are a lot of guys here, I think, to get excited about and really replenish offensive lines around the CFL. I talked to Chris Jones after the last day of practice, and I said, you know, a lot of people are talking about the O-linemen. Do you think it's the strongest group? And he said, in a normal year, there's five. Well, actually, that's not what he said. There's five. That's what he said. But he said there's five offensive linemen approximately in any given year really worth drafting and developing. And this year, he said there's 12, which goes to speak to the depth of the position. And JC, I want to talk about somebody who I thought was extremely impressive. He didn't compete through the whole event. He was either hurt or ill the last day or two. But I thought Nathaniel Desmoulins-Duguay out of Laval was sensational. 6'2", 293 pounds. He's somebody who was a two-time U Sports All-Canadian at left tackle at the Rouge Or. I didn't realize that he played center and guard at the Cégep level at Rimouski. And when he took one-on-one reps at center and guard, I was extremely impressed. He was dominant. Mm. And at 293 pounds, you know, that's I think, big enough to play on the interior. And his testing numbers were sensational. He was the top testing offensive lineman in literally every single category, which is incredibly impressive. He actually ran a faster 40-yard dash than a couple of fullback and linebacker prospects, which is amazing. And to me, he's somebody who I had in the high third round of my original mock draft. I could tell you right now, he's going to be in the first round of my next mock draft because I did not realize that he had the versatility to play all three. I was extremely impressed with him in the interview that him and I did post-practice, and I thought his one-on-ones were the best of any of the offensive linemen there. And I think whoever gets Nathaniel Desmoulins-Duguay out of Laval is going to be getting a good one.
Yeah, teams were super impressed with him. His movement skills are obvious. And the note they all have is that when he walks up to do his vertical jump or to do his bench press or to measure in, he looks like a modern offensive lineman. A lot of these kids coming out of U Sports schools maybe haven't had the same weight program. They're a little bit sloppy, a little bit extra weight on their frame. He is trim for an offensive lineman. That's not to say he doesn't have a little bit of a belly or anything like that. That comes with the position. But he's not sloppy fat, right? He is what you want physically from an offensive lineman in 2024. He is that guy.
He looks like a 293-pound athlete. That I think would be the appropriate way to say it. He looks like an athlete. The other player who I really want to highlight, JC, and trust me, I will give you a chance to talk about your favorite position in a moment, would have to be George Una, a guy who I heard very mixed things on coming into the combine. I did mock him in round one to Winnipeg at 8th overall, but I also, again, had talked to some people who weren't really sold on him. Very mixed bag, and I don't think there's going to be a mixed bag coming out of the combine because I thought he was by far the second best player in the one-on-ones just outside of Nathaniel Desmoulins-Duguay. He tested very well. He's a bit of a bigger body at 313 pounds. And he's somebody, unlike a lot of top prospects who play tackle at the U Sports level, just because, you know, teams need them to play tackle. He has extensive experience at guard for a team that loved to run the football at Windsor, but also calls himself a pass protector. I was shocked when I asked him in our interview, do you see yourself as a run blocker or a pass protector? He's like, honestly, I love pass pro. That's what I see my strength as. And I was like, wow, that caught me off guard, but it was kind of a cool answer. And to me, he answered every question there was to answer about him. He did play some tackle in 2022, but to me, did not get any accolades as far as I'm aware of in terms of OUA All-Star, whatever. And I have no idea how. I thought he was the second best offensive lineman at the combine. To me, he looks like somebody who's ready right now to be a sixth offensive lineman in the CFL. And I don't think it's going to be that long before he's ready to start for a team, whichever one ends up drafting him, I imagine, in the first round.
I think there was two other guys that really helped themselves in this offensive line group. And the first I'll touch on is John Bosse out of the University of Calgary. If you want to talk about somebody who everyone is going to eyeball as soon as he walks off the bus, it's this kid. 6'4" and a half, 335 pounds. But the big thing that teams are going to be fixated on is 36 and a half inch arms. That would be freakish for an NFL combine athlete. It's about the longest arms I've ever seen for a CFL combine athlete, certainly in the last five or so years. This kid has reach for days, has primarily played tackle at the U Sports level. I don't think he's quite fast enough to do that as a pro, but when he took reps there, his length was able to compensate for maybe his lack of foot quickness. But when he moved inside, I thought he took the coaching really well. He used his length effectively. He wasn't taking false steps. I thought he helped himself overall in this combine week by showing he could adapt to going inside and that his length was still going to be effective. Teams are going to question if he can bend enough. Some don't think he's physical enough in imposing himself, but he's got the size. He's got the tools. I was impressed with him when I interviewed him, and I think there's some team out there that's going to have him very high on their offensive line board, potentially even higher than some of these more polished guys, simply because the value in developing a guy like that with those unique physical tools is unlike any other player in this class.
I just realized I aired off the top of this segment. There's not six guys who weren't there. There's seven offensive linemen who weren't there. I missed Anum Donkwa, the hulking left tackle out of Howard. So that goes to show the depth here. There's you know, a half dozen offensive linemen at this combine who I think could be CFL players. Ryan Berta is somebody at center who I think could be a long-term CFL player. Another guy who I thought could be a really good candidate to play in the CFL is Owen Mueller. Also played at Windsor. To me, he played out of position. He needs to move inside to play guard. He's not going to play tackle at the CFL, but tested very well, had some good reps in the one-on-ones. So it's pretty incredible when you go, hey, there's four guys who could be high-level CFL players here. There's multiple guys who could be very solid backups or kind of borderline starters in the CFL. Oh, and by the way, the seven best guys aren't even here. Now, again, of those seven, some of them we'll never see in the CFL. We'll have to wait and see how guys like Theo Benedict, Kyle Hergel pan out south of the border. But this is a strong group, and it's going to be interesting because traditionally in the CFL draft, if you're an offensive lineman who can play, you're going in the first round, and there's a big run of offensive linemen. This year, there's going to be teams who can be a little bit more patient and say, hey, look, it's supply and demand. There's nine teams, and there's 12 who can really play. Why would we run up to the podium in round one to arbitrarily grab an O-lineman if we don't have to? We can get a good offensive lineman in round three, in round four. And traditionally, again, that's never been an option in the CFL. If you want a good O-lineman, you can't wait till round three or round four. You got to take them early. So I'm intrigued to see how that plays out. Let's talk about the D-line group, JC. I think it's fair to say this is not the strongest group in this year's draft. However, I do think that there is some talent here to be had.
Oh, there absolutely is. And to me, the guy to highlight off the top, unfortunately, didn't even take part in the competitive portion of the practices because he's not yet medically clear after shoulder surgery. But Luke Brubacker out of Wilfrid Laurier University is going to be somebody that a lot of teams are drooling over because of his physical measurables. 6'5" and a quarter, 246 pounds. This guy has only played football for 3 years, was a boxer in high school, went to Laurier for 2 years before he decided, hey, I think I want to try football for the first time, and emailed head coach Michael Falls essentially saying, hey, can I walk on to the team? Got blown off until he came back a few weeks later with a video of him working out and mentioned, hey, I'm massive, by the way, and a physical freak. Well, of course, he gets put on that Laurier team and makes an instant impact. He runs a 4.69 at that size, 38-inch vertical. Is absolutely insane, especially when you consider he's coming off off-season surgery. He's somebody who may not be the most polished pass rusher right now, but is going to dominate on special teams from day one and has the highest ceiling of perhaps any player in this draft class, simply because you do not find players with those physical tools coming around every single day.
Yeah, an interesting kind of comp for him. I would use Tavius Robinson, who started out his collegiate career at the University of Guelph, transferred amid the pandemic to Ole Miss, and then was eventually a fourth-round pick of the Baltimore Ravens. Tavius, 6'6", 257. Luke Brubacher, 6'5", 246. So just a little bit smaller than Robinson, but still very good, you know, even NFL size as an edge rusher. And Tavius did run the 40-yard dash slightly faster than Brubacher at the NFL Combine. Tavius Robinson ran 4.66 compared to Brubacher's 4.69. But Brubacher beat him in every other testing event, and some of it's not particularly close. Like, he beat the broad jump by 6 inches. He beat the vertical jump by 4.5 inches. He beat the shuttle by 0.3 seconds. And Tavius did not do the three-cone drill. So when you talk about athleticism, Brubacher is not just athletic for the CFL level. He would be considered a freak athlete, even potentially at the NFL level. And it wouldn't surprise me, despite how little football he's played, only had 12 career sacks with the Golden Hawks. Would not surprise me if an NFL team came sniffing around, not as a draft player, but as an undrafted guy down south, just to see, hey, how far away are you from that development curve? Because if we are willing to invest a year or two into you, especially with the size of practice rosters down in the NFL, there's simply not that many guys with his height, his wingspan, and also that level of athleticism. So I almost wonder if he's going to get a look down south. To me, the rest of this position group was not terribly strong. I like Tyson Hergott out of Waterloo. I thought he tested pretty well. I thought he looked pretty good in the one-on-ones, but I was expecting a lot more from the two NCAA defensive tackles that were involved. Daniel Opoku out of San Diego State was essentially a backup with the Aztecs for 5 seasons and then suddenly kind of exploded as a super senior in 2023. His testing numbers were okay at 6'4", 274 pounds. I thought he had a really good day one in the one-on-ones, and then he was invisible on day three. Justin Sambu did not do any drills or practicing, presumably due to injury, but his testing numbers out of Baylor were not very good at all. 6'2", 282, his 5-second 40-yard dash is solid for his size, but only 11 reps on the bench. I don't know how you spend a year at Baylor in that strength and conditioning program and come and do 11 reps on the bench. To me, Justin Sambu for sure was a faller this week, and that's unfortunate considering that, again, this is not, especially that interior D-line, this is not the strongest spot to begin with in the draft. It's unfortunate that more guys didn't separate themselves in that group.
It really is, and for Sambu, I think teams are struggling with his evaluation because they saw a player at Maine in 2022 that was absolutely dominant, strong against the run, showed some violent hands. Everything you wanted in that player was there, and teams were high on him. But his Baylor tape is not good. He didn't play very much, and then he comes to the combine and posts numbers like this. Teams are struggling to gel what they saw in Maine versus what they're seeing now and how it can be the same guy. He's going to really fall in this draft process, in my mind. Although I think he might have helped himself in some of the interviews, at least a little bit. I really enjoyed talking to him when I sat down with him. The other NCAA prospect here, of course, is nose tackle Samuel Obiang. He doesn't have very much length is the problem with him, right? He's under 5'11", 301 pounds, not going to be versatile up and down the line. Isn't a speedy guy either, but boy, is he nasty. He was starting some fights there in some of the one-on-one reps. Teams will like that, but he's going to struggle to find a spot in this draft, I think. It's really the U Sports players, the U Sports edge rushers that are going to be the cream of this crop because teams are going to see special teams value from guys like Brubacher and Hergott and Adoko potentially. I really have a soft spot here for Jason Janvier-Messier out of York University. He's the smallest of this group at 6'2", 232 pounds, but I think bends unlike anybody else. And really, if you think about him more as a linebacker type, he can come downhill on special teams and help you out. I think he's got potential in the CFL that is yet to be unlocked.
One thing I'll add about Sambu, going back to him for a moment, is interestingly enough, last year in the draft, there was a guy who spent most of his career playing D1 in the Northeastern United States and then went down to Texas for his last year of college, didn't do anything, and then posted mediocre testing numbers. And that was Luol Ugoak, who ended up going at the end of the first round of the Montreal Alouettes, helped them win a Grey Cup, earned a starting job, and is now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So suffice to say, different body types to an extent. Sambu's more of an interior guy, Ugoak more of an edge guy. But there is precedent, right, for somebody kind of on this path to achieve great success. It's possible that Sambu will overcome a rough combine. But one guy who I think benefited from that all of this is Kale Dava, a guy who's at the bottom of the Scouting Bureau rankings right now, but is still a top 20 guy. He was at the combine to interview, but did not participate in anything because he is still recovering from a torn rotator cuff. I talked to him. He said he's on schedule to be healthy in May. He said he's ahead of schedule. Other sources have said he might not be ready till the summer. But if you're a CFL team that needs a defensive tackle and you did not like what you saw at the combine, suddenly Dava's stock might rise because you're going, hey, we're happy to wait on this kid for, you know, 1, maybe 2 months of the season, get him into the fold, maybe let's say at the start of August, and help us make a push for the playoffs rather than rolling with the other guys we saw in Winnipeg.
The other guy I'll put in that conversation as well, Hodge, is Kyle Sampson out of UBC, 2-time All-Canadian at defensive tackle, was not able to go to the Invitational Combine because he was still recovering from injury, but will test on Friday along with those two NFL caliber offensive linemen. I am intrigued to see the type of numbers he puts up. If he can answer some of his athleticism questions, he could be a real riser despite never being at the CFL combine.
The linebacker group I thought was arguably the weakest position of the bunch. That's not to say there's no talent here. Joel DeBlanco absolutely stole the show. I'm going to talk about him, JC. You could talk about more of the depth guys. But DeBlanco, I mean, we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago, recently qualified for Canadian citizenship through his father. A very small correction. His family, the DeBlancos, are still based in Edmonton, but his father was actually born in New Westminster, BC, because his grandparents, who were born in Edmonton, basically came up across the border from their home in Washington State and had him there in New Westminster to take advantage of the health care that we have here in Canada, and then turned around and drove back to the States. So a slight correction on his family history. But suffice to say, Joel DeBlanco has his Canadian citizenship. He was first team all AAC as a member of the Cincinnati Bearcats in 2021 when he was also a team captain, and has spent the last couple of years, you know, he's 26 now, bouncing around the NFL, the USFL. And he came to the combine, which I thought was very surprising, right? Generally speaking, these players do not like preparing for their pro days. They do not like having to focus on the 40-yard dash and some other things that are maybe not as much, you know, football drills as track and field drills. And so when he came up to the combine, my first thought is, okay, but surely he's not going to test again. Then I had my conversation with them, which again is available on this podcast feed. And Joel DeBlanco said that he was going to improve a lot of his numbers from his testing day 2 years ago at the pro day, to which again, I thought that sounds wrong. That doesn't sound realistic. If you know, how are you more athletic at 26 than you were at 24? And then he did it. And it was so impressive. He at his pro day ran 4.76 in 2022. At the CFL combine, he ran 4.59. And that is especially impressive when you consider the way in which those were timed. Pro day times are hand timed. And JC, you know as well as anybody from the scouting work that you've done, that hand times are generally a little bit faster than laser. Well, to run 4.59 laser, that's almost like 4.45 flat hand time, or even 4.55 hand time. So unbelievable performance from him. He dominated the drills day one. I don't believe he participated after that. He certainly didn't on day three. But to me, he is the number one pick in this draft. He is somebody who, again, with his ties to Edmonton, should be a no-brainer for the Elks. 6'2", 231 pounds. I think he is a starter in the CFL at middle linebacker in a relatively short period of time. And he's somebody who has already connected with Alex Singleton, who he's garnered comparisons to at this point, right? Because, of course, he is kind of that Canadian-American middle linebacker who already had some pro experience before coming to the CFL and has now actually run faster than Alex Singleton did coming out of Montana State. So very impressive performance from DeBlanco. That's why he's going to be number one on my next mock draft.
Yeah, and deservedly so. I thought what impressed me more even than the testing numbers is once he decided to take off the pads and said, hey, I'm not doing the competitive portion, which is absolutely his right given that he's proven everything he needs to prove to go first overall, how engaged he was on the sidelines, joking with the guys, getting their intensity up, getting them to cheer on the players on the field during the 12-on-12 sessions, that was really impressive to me. It's clear he's a leader, and it's clear he doesn't think he's above this, which is something that you worry about with a guy who already has NFL experience, maybe doesn't have ties to the league, coming to an event like this with a bunch of U Sports players from schools he's never heard of before. Is he going to have an air of superiority and look down on the process and on the event? It was clear that Joel DeBlanco didn't. He fit right in, and he immediately took a leadership role. That's really going to impress some evaluators. The rest of this linebacker group, again, as you mentioned it, Hodge, not super impressive. I don't think many of them stood out on the field. I think teams really like Dawson Pierre, who is with the defensive back group, but practiced as a linebacker, will play linebacker, and Daniel Bell as well from Mount Allison. Those two guys, I think, might be the next two best linebackers in this group, despite being listed as DBs. But the other name, DK Bonham from South Alabama, a player who was supposed to go to the Invitational and had some controversy because he just simply didn't show up, told CFL teams eventually that he didn't have the funds to make it out there, and they made the decision to elevate him to the National Combine. I thought he impressed on day two of practice in particular, was not able to compete on day three due to a stomach virus, but had some good testing numbers, a 37-inch vert, 9'11" in the broad. These are some explosive numbers that you like to see. And it's good for him because he told me up until December, he thought he was done football, and he was up to 256 pounds, completely out of shape. Now he's trimmed down to 225 in the span of just 3 months and has some of his athleticism back. If you're able to gel with that kid and believe he'll put in the work to be a pro, there's some potential to unlock with DK Bonham.
Should be noted that there were also sources who indicated that a CFL team told Bonham not to show up at the Invitational Combine with the promise to draft him, but he did, when JC asked, deny this. So take that for what it's worth. Nick Weeb did not participate at this event because, of course, he is recovering from a torn ACL that he suffered during the Hardy Cup playoffs with the University of Saskatchewan Huskies. To me, kind of like Kale Dava, he's a guy whose stock might rise a little bit just because, again, as you pointed out, JC, not to say the linebackers were terrible, but this is not a particularly deep group. There weren't any kind of rock star testers. There are a few guys whose testing numbers were kind of disappointing. I didn't see any crazy flashes from the linebackers, especially in the pass rushing drills. I thought Bonham was probably the best pass rusher, but again, he's going to have some red flags for CFL teams based on the fact that, again, he stepped away from football, the fact that he was a no-show at the Invitational. So I think that, you know, even if Weeb isn't ready till, let's say, the start of the fall, he could be a guy who rises just because CFL teams, first of all, they'll get him for their playoff push, but secondly, is, you know, a guy who probably would be a top two-round pick if he was healthy, possibly even first-round pick if he was healthy. Let's talk about the DBs, JC. The most interesting player at the Combine, I thought by far, was Benjamin LaBrosse out of McGill. He's another guy who has stepped away from football previously, didn't play in 2023 due to academic issues with the Redbirds, but also left Syracuse, a decision that he said he regrets after the kind of the start of his second year with the Orange. He was a guy who played a lot as a first-year player with the Orange on special teams. Has freakish athleticism, ran at 6 foot, 189 pounds, a 4.51 40-yard dash, 38.5-inch vertical, 11-foot, 2-inch broad jump, just ridiculous numbers from LeBros. Was a first-team U Sports All-Canadian at cornerback with McGill in 2022, but is somebody who could potentially play halfback, could play safety. Played what he called Rover, what we would call strong side linebacker here in Canada, at Syracuse, and also has experience as a returner. So I think he's somebody who had some questions to answer in those interview rooms regarding, you know, his decision-making process and, you know, bouncing from team to team, that kind of thing. But I do think helped himself in the testing.
Yeah, he is the only player in this group that has NFL type measurables, but teams are going to have to mesh that with his history. I know I've talked to people who say, yeah, he's a tremendous athlete, but does he want it enough? Because he's quit twice, right? The first time at Syracuse and then the second time at McGill, not being able to raise himself to the academic standards of that institution. Is he somebody we can rely on to push through when times get tough? That's going to be a big question mark with Ben LeBros. The other thing is where you play him, right? Because you mentioned he can go to any of these positions in the defensive backfield, but he doesn't necessarily have the technique for any of them right now. He was a little bit rusty once we got the pads on at the combine. I thought looked good because his athleticism can compensate for some of that, but technically is not where he needs to be yet. Can he get there? Absolutely. The ceiling is sky high with Ben LeBros, but teams are going to have to mesh that with his past and be willing to invest some time getting him back up to speed.
I thought Christophe Beaulieu was the second best defensive back in attendance, the two-time U Sports All-Canadian and two-time RSCQ All-Star, I think is, you know, more or less the prototypical U Sports to CFL safety. He is the younger brother of Jordan Beaulieu, former CFL defensive back, but he's bigger than his brother was. I think he's more athletic than his brother was. And of course, playing for the Rouge et Or, I think always helps your draft stock at least a little bit, provided you're not too old or too heavy. And I don't believe Beaulieu is either of those things. The other player I will highlight here, you talked about two guys who are going to slot to the linebacker position. What about Daniel Bell out of Mount Allison? He is a four-time AUS All-Star, two-time AUS Defensive Player of the Year. Only did six reps on the bench at 6'1", 218, which is not very good. But he's a player who interviewed exceptionally well, has a ton of special teams experience, and played boundary halfback at the U Sports level, and just because the Mounties needed somebody at that spot. Will obviously never play boundary halfback in the CFL, but is a guy who I think could maybe play a little bit of safety. And if he doesn't have the range to play safety, I think could be dangerous at will. Ironically, or I should say coincidentally, Lucas Cormier, very similar kind of build, very similar testing numbers, also out of Mount Allison last year. He ended up going at the top of the second round to the Ottawa Red Blacks as kind of a will linebacker safety hybrid who could dominate on specials. And I think Daniel Bell could fit that mold similarly. But again, he's another example of a defensive back who is probably going to compete more as a linebacker than a true DB at the CFL level.
Yeah, a couple other guys that impressed me. Arthur Hamlin from Colgate, I think, is going to be a sneaky pick for a team. He's a guy who's versatile at the safety position. But I know a lot of scouts fell in love with his story. This is a kid who missed his junior year at Colgate because he was diagnosed with with Hodgkin's lymphoma, I should say, and had to miss the whole year recovering from cancer, but worked a full-time job during that span, refused to get off his routine, and has come back even stronger. I know teams were impressed with how he handled the interview and how he didn't bring that part up unless teams asked him about it. He's somebody who's not going to use that as a crutch or as something to elevate his status. It's just part of his story, and he will talk about it if asked, but he's not going to bring it up. He's a very quiet, reserved guy. Jackson Sombach out of Regina is 5'8". That's going to really hurt him in the draft stock, but I thought was exceptional during the practice portions, really showed his recovery ability. But the guy that not enough people are talking about right now is Jarrell Cummings, the corner from UBC, the former player at Simon Fraser University before that program collapsed. His testing numbers are fine. They're not great across the board, but teams are really high on this guy, despite the fact that he doesn't have ideal size at 5'9", 188 pounds. We heard a comparison to Davis Sanchez that I liked at the combine. I think that's accurate. He's somebody who can play corner at the CFL level, has the instincts and ability to do it. Don't be surprised if Jarrell Cummings goes a little bit higher than you expected in the draft.
I think with Sombach and with Cummings, you run into the issue of special teams. Is there special teams value? Can they compete at their height, at their size? Because those are positions that are generally not prioritized at U Sports. If you're the best cover guy on your team, it's rare that you're going to get sent out to challenge on special teams. But we'll wait and see. All in all, again, it was a great combine. I thought the group of players was very impressive. I did speak to talent evaluators who said they believe this is the best draft class they've ever seen. I've also talked to some who said, that sounds like hyperbole to me, but it's certainly very good. So just to give our listeners, readers, viewers, whatever, kind of a glimpse into the combine, the things that were said, the performances that we were able to enjoy. That's what we got to have to offer. Let's now take it to Hodges Heritage Moment, shall we? On this day in 2018, the Saskatchewan Roughriders signed defensive back John Ojo. The 6'2", 205-pound cover man was named a CFL All-Star as a member of the Edmonton football team in 2015, but missed the entire following season due to a ruptured Achilles. He signed with the New York Jets in 2017, but was released following only 1 month with the club and sat out the remainder of the season. Ojo didn't last long in Ryderville as he was released near the start of training camp. The Tallahassee, Florida native never played another professional football game. JC, can you think of more of a CFL one-hit wonder than John Ojo?
It's hard to. I mean, when you've got a guy who is struck by the injury bug like that, it's, you know, you feel for him, right? Because he clearly had the talent. A guy getting NFL opportunities after a year missed with an Achilles injury. There was something there with John Ojo, and I remember being very impressed with him as an Edmonton fan back in the day in 2015. But unfortunately, defensive back is a position where guys have short careers at the best of times, where production isn't necessarily consistent year to year, where you can be hit by a bad opportunity and lose out really quickly. And once he had that injury, he was never quite the same.
It is a shame. And he must be one of the only players in CFL history to be named an All-Star in the only year in which he played. That might be a future three-down article to making players who played one season, but were named CFL or at least West Division All-Stars. It's now time for the 3-minute drill. JC, the Riders have signed former Notre Dame quarterback Jack Cohn. Do you think he could be their potential future franchise pivot?
There's a lot to see before we make that determination, but there's also a lot to like about Jack Cohn, particularly from a toughness standpoint. He was great at Notre Dame, but the type of guy who will dislocate a finger and pop it back in before throwing a game-winning touchdown like he did against Toledo. I think Rider fans are going to really like him. And there's a potential, if he gets developed right, for him to slot in as the next guy after Trevor Harris. The Elks aren't looking to trade Canadian QB Trey Ford, though assistant general manager G. Roy Simon said he's not ready to lead an organization. Do you think that's fair, Hodge?
I mean, I'm not going to say it's completely unfair, but the last I checked, the Edmonton Elks were terrible last season until Trey Ford rallied them from under center. Is there things he needs to work on? Yes, but that looked like a brand new team once he took them over. JC, you predicted the winners for each testing event at the CFL Combine and only got two right. Do you think you're ever going to live that down?
I might not. Now, I would like to point out that I got two right, and then I correctly predicted a third guy who would win an event, just not the event I predicted. So
doesn't count.
I treat that as 3 out of 5. I would like to say, on the record, I was given some false information by somebody.
Wait, so you were lied to by a CFL prospect or an agent? What?
Oh, well, I know.
Welcome to the draft, bro. Welcome to sports reporting.
If you're listening, you know who you are. You know who you are. The Red Blacks are unveiling a new uniform to mark their 10th anniversary season. Are you looking forward to seeing them?
I am. After four awful seasons and a pandemic, I think it's time to change up the Red Blacks look. That new helmet they debuted got rave reviews last season, and I think it's time to embrace some more Rough Riders history with that look as well. So to me, a refresh, I think, is a very smart idea. Nine provinces called for the resignation of Football Canada President Jim Mullen following a proposed change to the organization's leadership structure. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, there's a lot of moving pieces going on here, and there's a lot of bureaucracy that I can't fully grasp my head around. But what's clear is that people are unhappy with this proposal, which would shift away from the current presidential model and have two new paid members of the executive to run Football Canada. Jim Mullen was expected to step down. He's not seeking either of those paid positions, but this was going to be an independent external hiring process, and people weren't thrilled, the members of the provinces, that they weren't going to have a hand in selecting who were going to be those jobs, potentially giving them to people who have worked with Football Canada in the past. It's just a bad look right now, right? These are all volunteers. These are people who are putting in immense amounts of work into football in this country to make it better. And unfortunately, this is coming at the worst possible time, not only with the Olympics coming up and Canada needing to qualify for that, but also Edmonton hosting the IFAF World Junior Championships coming up in June. It could not come at a worse time for this country's football organization. AC Leonard hinted that he's retiring in a cryptic social media post that has since been taken down. Do you think he's going to hang them up?
I think there it's likely he's going to hang them up. Obviously, the market was not as strong in free agency as he was hoping it would be. And he didn't get the kind of offer that he was hoping to get, which is kind of strange considering that he just set a new career high in sacks, I believe. But evidently, Edmonton's not willing to pay him top dollar, and neither is anybody else. So it doesn't surprise me that he doesn't want to keep playing for less than he thinks he's worth. Dave Dickinson said Craig Dickinson, his brother, is going to be a big asset for the Stampeders as a senior consultant. He'll be pre-scouting CFL opponents for Calgary and doing scouting work south of the border. Do you think that's a good role for Craig?
I think it's a great role for Craig, and I appreciate what Dave said in that interview about letting his brother have some time to recuperate after what we all know was a very intense job in Saskatchewan, not just because of all the hours you need to put in as a CFL head coach, but because of what it entails being in that market as well. He's going to have a chance to stay involved with the Stampeders organization, to do some good work, but also kick his feet up a little bit out of the limelight. I think it's going to work well for both parties. The Blue Bombers signed former NFL draft pick Larnell Coleman. Do you think he could be the front runner to replace Jamarcus Hardrick at right tackle?
I actually think Larnell Coleman should be the heir apparent to replace Stanley Bryant at left tackle. I think he is a longer-armed, more athletic offensive lineman who's going to excel in pass protection more. But strangely, Kyle Walters didn't seem to really offer an opinion on him when I asked him about it during the avail on Tuesday, the virtual one, which I thought was kind of strange. The Edmonton Elks are celebrating their 75th anniversary this year and are planning to host the largest gathering of alumni in team history. Are you excited for that?
Oh, absolutely. As somebody who grew up in a household that loves the Elks, who grew up as an Edmonton fan, I can tell you if I could attend that gathering alumni, I would. It would be absolutely heaven for anybody who supported the green and gold. Chris Jones is optimistic about the potential for new ownership in Edmonton, citing BC's success under Amar Doman and Montreal's success under Pierre-Carl Peladeau. Do you think that's a smart call?
You know, I don't think it's the wrong call. The board in Edmonton has, you know, there have been whispers that maybe they're a little tough. Maybe they got their fingers in the pie a little bit too much when it comes to how the team is actually run on the field. And having a good owner, I think, obviously is essential to any team's success. The question is, do you get the right owner? Because obviously it's clear that BC hit a home run, Montreal hit a home run, Edmonton has to hit a home run as well, because as much as a great private owner is amazing, a terrible private owner can sink the whole thing. The Calgary Stampeders have hired Bo Baldwin as their QB coach after Ryan Williams, who they hired in January, took a job at Georgia State. Could he be a big asset to the team?
I think he could be a huge asset to the team. And this is exactly the type of coaching hire that I think the CFL needs more of. They aren't doing a good enough job right now of filling vacant positions by looking into the college ranks on both sides of the border and looking for guys who are potentially up-and-comers. Bo is not necessarily an up-and-comer, but his resume speaks for itself. This is the guy who coached Michael Riley, Bo Levi Mitchell, Matt Nichols, and Vernon Adams Jr. in college. He knows how to handle CFL QBs, and with Jake Mayer being in a make-or-break year, you couldn't have a better candidate to coach him one-on-one. Hodge, you interviewed the Ottawa Redblacks director of pro personnel, Brendan Tammann, about staying in the haunted room at the Fort Garry Hotel during the CFL Combine. Was it the best interview you've ever done?
It was the best interview I've ever done. I was howling laughing talking to Brendan Tammann, who has a well-earned reputation for being a beauty and a very funny guy to talk to. I will not spoil the whole article here. Please go read it at 3Down Nation. It is hilarious, if I do say so myself. I will say, JC, I had a number of people reach out complimenting me about the article from other publications. And as a reporter, you also know that sometimes in this business, you know, you're given terrible quotes and you're expected to make chicken salad out of chicken you know what. This was the exact opposite. This is a super easy column to write because I got amazing quotes. I think just about anybody could have made it into a good column. So I appreciate Tammann's time and for indulging me with what's admittedly a bit of a silly topic, but I think one that was really fun and I do think brought some color and some levity to this event. So on that note, we thank you as always for listening to the 3Down Nation podcast. I'm John Hodge. He's JC Abbott. Justin Dunk should return next week. And we will be back, by the way, on our regular Wednesday schedule. We're a little bit early with this episode this week, but we wanted to talk while the combine was fresh. And of course, we didn't do a full regular episode last week. So we're a little bit early this week. Be prepared for a regular episode next week. Until then, take care.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.